In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain.
Good shooting, John. Nice shot.
I like to put down that beagle before those evolutionary ideas get a chance to get into further lands and further minds. I'm John Kurlinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to this week's episode of Sink the Beagle,
where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues of evolution and creation. Lighthearted because we know no other way. Serious because we are creationists and we take the issue dead seriously.
And we're unapologetic.
Unabashed.
Unabashed. We don't bash.
Biased.
We're bashing unabashed.
We bash sometimes. Not hard.
That's right. We want to talk today about surfs up, don't we?
Well, kind of surfs up. We want to talk about some flooding again.
Flooding? The big flood?
No, we don't want to talk about Noah.
Not today.
Not
okay.
Noah. We want to talk about, the one thing that's always puzzled people a little bit is how come you have people and civilizations, they always date them beyond the biblical flood, of course.
Of course.
But they date the American Indians and Central America and South America, and you have the people over in Australia, which are a little harder to get to, but you have the people of the islands of the Pacific and China. How do all these people somehow end up from little Noah's flood to these faraway places on Earth, and how do they get there?
You know, the Bible's story on how people spread out is actually fairly similar, at least in the location and the directions of what anthropologists think, paleontologists think about the spread of man, because they pretty well put the beginning of man, the first fossils, as sort of North Africa and, you know, almost
Middle East
kind of general areas, the earliest man and civilizations, and spreading out over the planet. And that's interestingly very much like the biblical account.
Yes, the biblical account has post-flood. There's a time when all the earth is united under one language, and they're building this great city called Babel under the descendants of Ham and Cush and Nimrod is the first mighty king of Babylon, so to speak, or the attempt to build a tower beyond any floodwaters.
And we've talked here on Sink the Beagle before about the story of the Tower of Babel and what we think was going on there, but in particular, we want to look at one aspect that's also talked about in Genesis 10 and 11 and right in there. And it is maybe a reference, we're not sure, maybe a reference to other water rises or floods, shall we say, that are post-Noah's flood.
Well, maybe a good place to begin, Stan, actually, is to look at what kind of world was there after the flood. Mm-hmm. And we tend to think that the Bible seems to describe a very comfortable planet, greenhouse, water above, fountains of the deep, lots of land.
No rain. Because there was apparently some moisture in the air that didn't need to come down and rain.
Yeah. And so, but after the flood, you have all of a sudden, you have great changes in the land masses.
You have seasons.
Then
weather.
All of these things and weather. Mm-hmm. And we also believe that things were once comfortable have gotten real cold and began what we would call the Ice Age, which had advances and retreats during the Ice Age.
Well, we've spent some Sink the Beagles on what we think the Bible supports in the area of post-flood very heightened glacial age, ice age, which may have lasted several hundred years.
Yeah.
Now, there is evidence, there's no question that there's evidence of massive ice flows and erosional features.
Glaciation.
You're from that neck of the woods, Wisconsin, where there's a lot of evidence of glaciation, the big ice sheet that used to spread over North America.
Yeah. As a kid.
And there's no doubt that the world has been generally warming for hundreds of years, and that would mean diminished ice flows and so forth, the ice packs getting smaller. That means more water in the ocean, more liquid water, and frankly, a change in the shall we say, shoreline.
Sure. Well, most paleontologists and scientists would agree that at one time the continents had at least land bridges to almost every place. You could just about walk anywhere in the world via land bridge. They know the people are familiar with the land bridge between up in Siberia and, mm-hmm. and Alaska. The mm-hmm. Bering Straits have actually, the shelf is real shallow there, mm-hmm. and you could...
And even million-year type people that believe in long ages think that was only a few thousand years ago, comparatively recent in geologic time.
Yes, and therefore some of the tribes and Indians of North right. America and Central and South America
literally walked across.
They think genetically they came from Asia, mm-hmm. and which would have eventually had come from the Middle East. So
you only need to look at the Eskimos, you can tell they're Asian.
Yes, mm-hmm. and so the point that we're getting at is, when did these things occur, mm-hmm. and what may have caused their distribution of people? One thing we know of is that the Bible tells in the story of Genesis 11, the Tower of Babel,
right.
which would explain the nationalities as far as language goes, and God mm-hmm. confusing the language, and there was
right.
division. And so with that inability to get along or communicate, people start just kind of wandering off to form their own little areas, find their own little places to live.
In chapter 11 and verse 8, it says, "So the Lord scattered them," that is these nations, "abroad from there," from the Tower of Babel, "over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city." Now, what we want to zero in on, John, for this particular segment is an interesting reference to the days in which the earth was divided by God. And that is a reference to a previous chapter, chapter 10
yeah.
and verse 24.
But before we go there, Stan,
okay.
I want to just back up just a hair.
Go ahead.
What we have first is God, before he divided what we're going to be talking about today,
uh-huh.
he first divided people.
Mm-hmm.
People that were in rebellion, united against him, he is now going to scatter them, I believe for the sake of the gospel, to try to
right.
find a group of people that he can work with.
Right.
And so he scatters.
Lengthen this, the days of the earth, basically.
Lengthens, carrying out this experiment after mm-hmm. the flood mm-hmm. and just trying to get this a group of people together. So he first scatters people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we want to go back to this text. Give us our torpedo text sort of for today, or the text that we're going to focus on in the Bible, which may give us some insight onto this division that we're talking about.
We're going to talk about Eber, the father of Eber is the root for the word Hebrews. So the father of the Hebrew nation, the father of Eber had two sons, and the sons were verse 25. Two sons were born to Eber. The name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. Now let's look at Peleg, because that's where we want to take a look.
First of all, it's interesting. It gives us a little phrase describing, most of the time they just go through names and stuff, but here it's mm-hmm. giving a little event. It says, in his days, during his time, something happened to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
The earth, it says, is divided. And there's been several theories that have been proposed about what was this division they're talking about. Because
mm-hmm.
the divisions of languages apparently had already occurred. What's going to be described in chapter 11 actually probably occurs a couple generations before Peleg,
right,
or at least one generation before, you'd think.
Nimrod was the grandson of Ham,
mm-hmm.
whereas Peleg is the grandson of Shem. So you have a couple of generations there, so it may very well be, John, you may have absolutely hit it, is that the people were already migrating and moving across the face of the earth when God divided the earth, quote, according to this description. It says the name of the one son was Peleg. Now let's take a look at that word Peleg for a minute, because it might give us a clue as to what was actually divided. It does say that the earth was divided, and the word for the earth there is the simple Eretz, which is the simple Hebrew word that's always, through the book of Genesis.
Land.
It's always, it says in the creation account of God, called the dry, literally the dry things, the dry parts, Eretz.
Yeah, the land was divided. So it's not talking about people in this verse. It seems to be talking about the physical structure of the earth. The name Peleg is actually a proper name, but there's a verbal form of his name, which means division.
Mm-hmm.
But and when you start following it up, it also has a unique nuance to it. It also can be a reference to like a channel or a stream mm-hmm. or water that divides.
Now the word literally means to divide by boundaries or separate. But like you say, an earlier form of the word appears to hint at water, a water boundary or a channel or something like
that. Or it's
that.
In harmony with that concept.
Yeah, it can allow for that. We get in even the English word from the King James use of this Peleg word, the word pelagic, which means marine. You know, we're birders. Cindy and I are birders, and pelagic words are pelagic birds are marine birds. So
birds
the
that
words
deal with water.
Yeah, live out in the water. So anyway, Peleg may allow for this thinking that God divided the earth with water.
So you have these nations, these people that don't speak the same language, or at least close enough of a language, scattering throughout the earth on these land bridges post-flood,
right.
Maybe during the time of heavy glaciation
in two
and
generations,
ice, while you still have land bridges along what we would call the continental shelves today,
right.
In several generations,
right.
And then you have the warming, a gradual warming of the earth over several hundred years, and it melts all these glaciers.
Right.
What? How much water would you get out of these glaciers that melt?
Well, I think that the numbers that we're thinking about here are somewhere around a couple of hundred meters, maybe several hundred feet in elevation.
So you're raising the oceans because of these giant meltings of these ice ages. Mm-hmm. They always talk about flooding of New York City if the polar ice caps melted.
Right.
Well, this must have been even more ice than even that.
Well, the polar ice cap won't actually produce much water because that ice cap is in the water. And when was the last time you had a glass with ice cubes on it? And as soon as the ice cubes
melted,
the water overflowed the cup. It stays and doesn't happen. So when we're talking about a real difference in the level of the ocean, it would have to be water that was on land that
in
actually now
form.
is in the ocean. So yes, if we believe in an ice age and the continent-sized ice caps, oh, yes, if that water got into the ocean, it would definitely affect the levels of the ocean.
And so with the raising levels of the ocean, now you have the complete division that began at the Tower of Babel.
It's a
possibility
to
explain why you have similar type genetic people that are found in Central America and North America that match almost genetically the people of Asia and China and or whatever over there.
And
studies have proven that out today, genetically. They think that there's a definite link. It would explain how they got here. They don't think they came by boat.
And they also will explain why certain kinds of animals are found in certain regions, especially of the planet, not so much others. Australia, for instance, and some other places that have unique animals that may have just settled there and didn't spread beyond that.
And so it's interesting to see that this is a plausibility which we think helps explain our history of our world, which makes in many ways much more sense. It seems to follow would be a natural, a biblical description of what actually happened, and what we see today is could very well follow these lines versus an evolutionary thought where you have all these various species of and how do men get around, you know, and how do the people get around to even make these things happen?
The biblical dates for this, incidentally, we start with the birth date of Peleg to his death date, would go somewhere around about 100 years to as much as 300 years, 340 years to be exact, after the flood. So it allows enough time for these things to take place.
Yeah, they could do it in several years,
centuries for the ice to form and then begin to melt again.
So you have the time factor would work, and the distance traveling isn't beyond the reasonability of people around the move and migrating people. And maybe God uses enticements of different lands or different animals or game and just keeps on drawing nomadic people.
Well, the word says he scatters them, so it makes it seem like a very active movement of the people. They were just kind of floating around. They were moving.
Maybe they're chasing, and God has the animals running one way, and they're just following them around. And he has certain animals.
I don't know.
We like that kangaroo keeps hopping. I don't know. But it seems to make a reasonable, and that's what we hope to have. It's just possible, reasonable explanations for the faith that we have in Scripture and its
story. The history of this planet is best outlined as we understand the book of Genesis and all the history that's in.
Makes the most sense. And so we hope you'll have enjoyed this and tune in again to another
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Island.